The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Twas the pod before Christmas, and everything was stirring in football's house, with fixtures arriving thick and fast like Dominic Raab on a reindeer, and cup games with more gifted kids than Santa's to-do list. We'll be wrapping it all up for you today on this Totally Football Show Ho Ho, in association with Paddy Power. Yeah, listener, December 23rd, eh? Woohoo! Here we go. We've got Duncan Alexander and Adrian Clark, and a big hello to Nick Miller today on Tootie Football Show. All right, fellas.
Hello.
Jingle bells.
Yeah, season's greetings.
Absolutely. It's a special time of year, isn't it? You can be as cynical as you like, sick of the way it's become commercialised, but there's something about the Carabao Cup quarterfinals that just melts the heart.
It's cliche to be cynical about Christmas, as Half Man, Half Biscuit once said.
Well, yeah. So true, so true. Carabao Cup, though, we were being a little bit, snarky about it the other day.
Yeah, that was upsetting. The Carabao Cup is now... The quarterfinals and semifinals of the Carabao Cup are now some of the best bits of the football season.
Yeah, is that?
Because... I think sort of 10, 15 years ago, Premier League teams didn't take it seriously, and you know, Arsene Wenger used to get criticised for playing the kids, etc. But now, it's actually something that I think a lot of teams, Liverpool maybe accepted, a lot of teams want to win. And if you get through to this stage, they start to take it pretty seriously. And so, yeah, I mean, some of the games in recent memory at this stage have been brilliant. So, and also that week just before Christmas has got a little bit of a sort of exciting pre-holiday feel to it. So
yeah, maybe they should have a whole round of Premier League fixtures there. That would really...
Two, why not?
Adrian, you a fan of the wild innocence of the Carabao Cup quarterfinals?
Absolutely, yeah, I love to see it. I like seeing the younger players come in and shine, really do. It's awesome, and obviously Arsenal, will get to that shortly. Eddie Nketiah, he's barely had a kick this season, yet he comes in and all of a sudden he's worth £40 million, or he's going to be Arsenal's next main striker. You get good stories in the Carabao Cup because players emerge, and we've seen a lot of youngsters shine this week.
By the way, welcome back from your holidays.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was so good. Yes, it was like chalk and cheese.
All right, mate.
Coming back into the UK from the Maldives, let me tell you.
Yeah, we're happy for you. Nick, do you want to just pitch in with more Carabao Cup enthusiasm?
It's not so much enthusiasm, that it was about 10 minutes ago last night. It looked like there was going to be quite a sort of interesting semi-final lineup with was Brentford 0, Chelsea 0, and Leicester were winning. And now it's kind of, I mean, you know, there'll be some good games in the semi-final. But
it's the European finals from 2019 mixed up. What more do you want? Europe will be agog at this.
Wow, that's interesting.
The Carabao Cup is taking its lead from the nascent Super League, of course.
I don't think that's fair.
Florentino Perez is going to present the trophy.
We're going to get on to the Carabao Cup very shortly. It wasn't the only high-level drama that we were enjoying this week. There was also a big meeting of the suits on Monday, which at the time, it felt like, might see that midweek round next week postponed. But instead, that'll be going ahead. Nick, what are the headlines from the big meeting on Monday?
No headlines at all, really, because everything is going ahead as planned. At the moment, the Premier League clubs have been advised that if they have 13 fit players plus a goalkeeper, they should just kind of stop whining and crack on with it. But a couple of teams at the time of recording, anyway, have already fallen foul of that, with Leeds against Liverpool and Watford Wolves being called off. We're recording this at sort of lunchtime on Thursday, so maybe there'll be more to come. But that's the state of play at the moment. There is a meeting of Premier League managers and captains at some point on Thursday, so whether anything substantive is going to actually come out of that, I'm not sure, but you may well know the results of that by the time everyone listens to this.
A couple of changes that were decreed on Monday. FA Cup replays for the third and fourth round have been scrapped. Carabao Cup semi-finals might return to being one-legged affairs. And also, sporting events in Wales will be behind closed doors.
Yeah, and obviously the Scottish Premiership winter break has been fought for as well. The Wales thing introduces a slight curio because Chester play in the right. National League North. Their ground, the Davies Stadium, is right on the border of England and Wales. The pitch and the stands are in Wales, but the offices are just over the border in England, so technically they are governed, even though they will actually be in Wales, technically they are governed by the rules in England, so they'll be the only ground in Wales that will be able to have fans for their game on Tuesday, I think it is.
Right, yeah, Tuesday they're at home to Fylde. Yeah, crikey. Be interesting to see how that one plays out.
Going back to the 13 fit players plus a keeper decision, I really do welcome it. There should not be any games called off, really, under that criteria, should there? In the Premier League, I think almost every club, if not every club, is paying multiple thousands of pounds a week to at least 30 or more players. You know, they give $5,000 a week to their reserves, don't they? So, you know, if you're out there in that much money...
You sound angry about that, Adrian, isn't
it? Well, yeah, slightly, yeah. When it was 500 for me. when you're laying out that much money on professional players, they're good enough to play in the Premier League. So there shouldn't be any games off moving forwards. Every club out there has about 60 pros these days. There's no excuse.
I hear what you're saying, Adrian, but do you not feel that it massively falsifies the outcome of the league if you basically midway through suddenly start mixing it up with people's beating?
But teams get injury crisis as well, don't they? I mean, Leeds
not
have
down
got,
to 13 fit
no,
players.
But Leeds
maybe
have got,
Liverpool should rerun last season from having no central defenders.
Leeds have got half of their or more than half of their first team out. No one feels sorry for them, and none of it's COVID related, is it? So. I just kind of think we have to accept it as part of like an injury.
In that spirit, we've got Duncan here who is COVID related and is just battling through. So have That's some true. Of that, Jordan Henderson.
Yeah. Well, the podcast rules, you've got to have at least two guests with COVID. So we're all right. They had to battle on. But you know, I'm not saying I'm a hero, but if other people want to say that, that's up to them. But I would like to see a Venn diagram of people that eulogise Aston Villa for winning the league using only 14 players and then also moan this Christmas about their team missing players because, as Adrian says, you can't have it two ways.
Hashtag perspective. All right, that's enough chit-chat. Let's hear about the Carabao Cup.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Diogo Jota, Liverpool's goal-scoring hero, does it and sends Liverpool into the semi-final of the Carabao Cup.
Woo! Carabao Cup quarterfinals saw Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea and Spurs, a diverse bunch, making their way to the semi-finals. Game of the midweek was surely the extraordinary 3-3 draw between Liverpool and Leicester, which ended 5-4 on penalties to Liverpool. And lads, Jurgen Klopp's fallen in love with his team all over again. The romance of Wednesday night, though, Leicester going 2-0 up in the first quarter of an hour. It was 3-1 after half an hour. 20 minutes to go. Liverpool are still 3-1 behind. And then Diogo Jota makes it 3-2. And they equalise in the 95th minute through Minamino. And then it looks like Minamino himself has blown it with his spot kick in the shootout. But Ryan Bertrand blows it for Leicester. And then Jota finishes it off. Anyway, extraordinary stuff.
It really was. It was an absolute belter, wasn't it? And it was kind of ironic that it was Ryan Bertrand that missed the penalty in the end, because at 3-1 up when Leicester were absolutely flying, he went quite defensive, Brendan Rodgers. He made a change. I think Soyuncu was injured, but he also decided to take off Kinnan Dewsbury-Hall, who was having a really, really good game. He came off and Bertrand came on, and basically he went back to a back five. And he's taken a bit of stick for that in the local media and among Leicester fans for basically inviting pressure, because that's what they did. And his reasoning, and he was very staunch about this after the game, was that, oh, no. We had to do this because Vestergaard is a very different type of centre-back to Soyuncu, has different qualities. And for that reason, I couldn't play him alongside Ndidi as a centre-half with a right winger at right back. So in a roundabout way, what he was saying is that Vestergaard, the player he spent a lot of money on not so long ago, can't play in a back four. And having watched him earlier in the season, actually, at home to Burnley, I'd probably go along with that. It was absolutely awful. But yeah, he was basically saying that Vestergaard can't be trusted in a back four.
Vestergaard's played in quite a lot of 9-0 defeats, which for me is a bit of a red flag as well. So, I mean, that Ndidi at centre-half thing didn't work because Minamino's equaliser basically came from him completely misjudging a ball into the box and sort of jumping up, missing it, and it just basically landing with Minamino, who finished really well, but Ndidi knew straight away what he'd done. So,
in defence of Brendan, his hand was rather forced by the fact that he lost two defenders in this game, Soyuncu and Pereira. But a lot of people did feel that the attitude, and particularly the time-wasting shenanigans, invited this kind of karmatic retribution come the end of the game.
But if you name pretty much the strongest team you can, and Jurgen Klopp uses the Carabao Cup as a sort of way to express existential pain about fixture congestion, which isn't going to be good given they've now potentially got two, maybe three more games, and you go 3-1 up at Anfield, and James Maddison's knee sliding in front of the cop, then you really do need to win the game. And also, you saw in the shootout, which I'm sure we'll come on to, but Schmeichel didn't make a save. All the Liverpool miss came from blasting it over Minamino. And Tielemans, there was a lovely moment when Tielemans was sort of pointing really aggressively to where he thought a player was going to shoot, and Schmeichel did dive that way but didn't get to it. So it's a massive... It's, again, with Leicester. I know they won the FA Cup, but they do keep getting into these good positions and sort of blowing a chance to add more trophies.
Just on the Schmeichel in the penalty shootout, it was quite enjoyable how, when someone is that alpha about things, he was really sort of giving it the big one to trying to intimidate all the Liverpool penalty takers, and didn't save a single one of them and got beaten. I was reminded of that he tried that in the World Cup a few years ago against Australia. And after Mile Jedinak scored, and after the game, some journalists said to Jedinak, "Oh, were you kind of intimidated by Schmeichel's antics?" And Jedinak, who's about 6'4", kind of massive chest and big beard, kind of puffed his chest out and said, "Did I look like I was intimidated by it?" So yeah, it was particularly enjoyable to see someone like that to lose a penalty shootout.
It feels like something that Peter Schmeichel took him out into a snowy field at Christmas and taught him when he was a kid, but he never quite got through, and he's never quite been able to do it properly.
Yeah, some sort of Rocky-esque training camp as Peter just yelling at him from 3 feet away, and Kasper's never quite managed to nail it.
And on the flip side, Kelleher was like the most understated of keepers, wasn't he? He was like, yeah, whatever, it's fine. You know, I've made a
save. Well, it helps with him that he looks rather like a supporter who's donned the jersey or sort of wandered onto the pitch in a replica shirt, but yet performed brilliantly.
Really don't know what it appeals to me about a beta male overcoming the alpha and having been kind of, you know, tried to be bullied on a football pitch. Yeah, not sure.
Just on the subject of Liverpool's kind of constant stream of new youngsters and their upcoming award for services to Wikipedia, but Billy Cometti is starting on Wednesday means that Liverpool have now used 14 academy graduates this season alone. That's remarkable stuff. They play Arsenal, as you say, extra fixtures for them. Semi-finals coming up the first and second week of January, crikey. They'll be playing the Gunners on the 4th of January. That's only 2 days after they have a Premier League visit to Chelsea.
Jurgen Klopp said after we mentioned the Carabao Cup semi-finals possibly just being one leg before, but he was very happy to... He was just saying that, yeah, just make it one leg. If we have to go to Arsenal and play, I'm perfectly happy with that. So whether that will happen, whether they can do that at this kind of late stage of the competition, I don't know. But Klopp seems perfectly happy to go along with it.
Right. Do Liverpool have a good record against Arsenal at all, particularly?
Well, they're always classics. Yeah, there's always goals in the games. There was a 5-all in the Carabao Cup at Anfield not so long ago. Joe Willock scored a belter, but Arsenal lost.
There was
on
that
games.
Julio Baptiste game as well, wasn't there? I seem to recall. So.
Yeah, it's a few classics. The Charlie Nicholas final, of course, back in 87.
Well, if we're going to talk about classic Carabao Cup / League Cup performances by the Arsenal, What about the time they won this competition when you were at the club, Adrian? 1993.
Yeah. I know. They haven't won it since. It's a remarkable. Yeah, I was either in the youth. I think I was in the youth team at the time. Yeah, I went to the final. And
your job was to make sure Steve Murray didn't get hurt, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, failed. It was remarkable because he never ever scored. He never scored a goal. He never got anywhere near the box.
He scored the winner in this final, which was against Sheffield Wednesday. And then what happened?
And then in the celebrations afterwards, Tony Adams, I think, hoiked him onto his shoulders to celebrate. And, you know, what a hero. It was Stevie Morrow's big moment because he was only ever really a fringe player. He was more of a reserve than the first teamer there. And it was a special moment for him, instantly ruined when Tony dropped him and he landed on his shoulder and he busted his arm really badly. Jesus. And he was out for a long, long time. I think he was on oxygen. I spoke to, who was it? It was David Hillier recently about that. And he said that there was zero celebrations after the game. Like they were meant to go out and have a bit of a sort of knees up or a banquet of sorts. And it was all off because everyone was like really worried about Steve Morrow. It was, it was bizarre.
As a youth team player, were you allowed to sign his cast, or was that just something that was limited to the seniors?
No.
Special privileges?
No, that was way above my pay grade at that stage, yeah.
Adrian, tell us about Arsenal's 5-1 win this Tuesday over Sunderland. You were particularly thrilled with Eddie Nketiah, as you were saying earlier, and his third goal.
Oh, it was a beaut, wasn't it? It was an absolute beaut. It started with Leno, and they played the ball out the pitch really nicely. Lovely split. Defence splitting pass from Ødegaard for Pepe. Beautiful Megs. We all love to see a Megs, don't we? And it was a really embarrassing one for the Sunderland defender. And the back flick finish. It was from all of 7 yards out, which is kind of long range for Eddie Nketiah. His average goal distance before this game was 5.8. yards, so given that the other two were inside the 6 yard box, that's probably stayed the same. So yeah, he's a proper penalty box poacher. And what struck me during those celebrations was how muted he was. Normally you'll recall he does the whole phone thing and there's a beaming smile, but he was very muted, and that does make me think that, well, he's not happy because he wants more game time. And I think Arteta's gone on record as saying, we've offered him a new contract, we want him to stay, but he wants to play more. So yeah, watch this space, I guess. He's either sort of raised the fee, or it might not be that surprising if Mikel Arteta now started to rotate him with Alexander Lacazette as the main striker, given what's happening with Aubameyang.
Yeah, absolutely. Out of contract in the summer. Nketiah, very good. The other semi-final, meanwhile, will see Tottenham Hotspur face Chelsea with Antonio Conte against his former club, of course. Nick, Spurs 2-1 winners over West Ham on Wednesday. A fair result?
I suppose it was a fair result, although Tottenham did score their two goals against the run of play, which I thought was hadn't seen happen too many times before. But then, as someone pointed out to me on Twitter, did you not see Spurs play under Mourinho? Which is, you know, I suppose is a fair point. But yeah, I mean, I suppose it was just a sort of continuation of their improvement under Conte. I mean, it was the game was great fun, but they seemed like it seemed a sort of a bit more of a controlled performance, and certainly one with fewer of clanking mistakes than against Liverpool, although Eric Dier did kind of pretty much give the ball away.
The new Pirlo?
Yeah, well, apparently so. But even the great men like Dier and Pirlo make mistakes occasionally.
All right. Adrian, can you just talk me through what to make of the this revelation about Eric Dier and how he's set to become, I could say Pirlo, a bit more Bonucci-esque, you know, for anyone who's... Well, I'm going with the Serie A reference, actually, I do. But anyway, yeah, as this kind of incredibly visionary, long-range pass-pinging centre-back.
Honestly, I don't know if Conte had been on the mulled wine or not, but I'd just be staggered if Eric Dier could, in a few years, become one of London's best central defenders, let alone one of the world's best. I mean, if he does... then Conte is more of a magician than we realise. It was a ludicrous quote, absolutely ludicrous. He's got limitations, Eric Dier. Yeah, he can ping a ball. He can ping a ball. And he's a technically decent player, but at centre half, I've never fancied him really. I think he's a little bit of a liability, but look, Conte is the man that sees him every day in training, isn't he? So I'm prepared to have egg on my face in a couple of years' time, but it wouldn't surprise me if Dier wasn't in the Spurs team in a year or two's time. I just don't think he's that good.
He'll be at what, Man City by then, do you think, or Real?
Do you?
I mean, if anyone can turn Dier into Bonucci or Baresi or whoever, then it may be Conte. He's already performed one kind of minor miracle. I don't know if anyone else saw this kind of mad graphic that was on Sky during the game, but Spurs have gone from under Nuno being the 20th ranked Premier League team in terms of distance covered to the first ranked.
Yeah, extraordinary.
Just shows how a scary Italian man can make you run for it, doesn't it? I mean,
it's true, isn't it?
Essentially.
Yeah.
It is true. Football is about running, guys. Football is about running. The skill and shooting, you need to be able to pass, etc., etc. But if you can run harder than the person you're up against, it does give you a big advantage. And yet Spurs look faster, don't they? And you wouldn't imagine that players would gain pace.
But this is the point, isn't it? That when managers don't work out for a club, it's because they can't convince their players to go that extra mile. You know, it's that, anyone who's watched The Sopranos, it's that bit where Richie Aprile can't convince the bosses and Junior says he couldn't convince them. And I always think that when a manager loses the dressing room, that's the same point. And Conte,
look what happened to Richie Aprile.
Exactly, yeah. So,
well, I mean, for anyone who hasn't seen Sopranos, let's leave that there.
I mean, he was a huge success and he went on to lead the family.
As I say. Anyway, I was just going to mention about the Hammers being without their entire first choice back four, which was also a significant advantage to Spurs in this game.
Yes, and I think we should also praise West Ham's progression as a club under Moyes, because this was, you know, two of London's biggest teams going head-to-head in a quarter-final. And West Ham, you know, they had a pass completion rate of like nearly 87%. They dominated the ball. Declan Rice looked, you know, like a world-class midfielder. And they could have easily have won this game, I think. And yeah, they went out, but it shows their progression. It wasn't just kind of plucky West Ham trying to sort of nick a result away at Spurs. They looked like one of the Premier League's best teams. And they'll be disappointed, but I think it augurs well for the rest of the season. And I think Jared Bowen possibly is the better option than Antonio as the main forward now.
Interesting. A lovely goal.
There was also a nice moment in the game where Spurs were counter-attacking, I think, and Bowen brought down Reguilón off the ball, and there was a sort of very, very low rent version of Zidane sending off in the 2006 World Cup final, because the referee didn't see it at all, and the assistants apparently didn't see it at all either, and he got a little word in his ear from the fourth official, who said, "Ah, no, you need to bring it back and book him." So, having kind of waved play on about 30 seconds later, he brought it back and booked Bowen.
Full circle. From the moment which was the genesis, the birth of VAR, supposedly.
Well, another thing in this game, we saw Areola have a header in the opposition box right at the end, which is always nice to see an opposition goalkeeper going up and winning the ball. And Lloris not only hung on to the ball and he could have smashed it downfield, but you know, he respected both the clock and the goalkeeper's union, which is lovely to see.
That is nice. Spurs through to face Chelsea, who were 2-0 winners over Brentford. Both goals coming in the last 10 minutes. Pontus Janssen own goal, and then Chelsea awarded a penalty, which Jorginho converted after his recent travails from the spot. Chelsea, with a much-changed team from their draw at Wolves, getting a rare victory. We'll talk more about both those clubs in the course of today's Super Soraway Festive Totally Football Show. Next up, it's Premier League.
Hi, listeners. How are you? I'm Carl Monaghan from Paddy Power. We're only days now away from the feeding frenzy that is Christmas. Get the sweatpants ready for Boxing Day, where Paddy will give you guys a free £5 bet builder bet on any match in the Premier League. What's a bet builder? Well, it's when you can combine a bunch of different markets from within the same game all into the one bet. So producer Charlie and I have racked our brains, listeners, and picked out a festive bet builder for you. We are looking at the Man City-Leicester game and have started off safe enough with the Man City win at 6-1 on. The last four games between the sides at the Etihad in the league have been 5-2 to Leicester, 3-1 to City, 1-0 to City and 5-1 to City. And we foresee plenty more goals between these two sides again. So putting both teams to score, yes, in the bet builder was a no-brainer at 17-20. We also have been convinced that over 2.5 goals looks a winner too, at odds of 4-11, considering it's clicked in three of the last four Premier League encounters at Eastlands. I can't help but think of Mahrez's step-over and PlayStation-esque finish back in the spring of 2016 in Leicester's title-winning season, and I see these two go at it. So it was a close one between Mahrez and, of course, the prolific Foxes striker Jamie Vardy in terms of an anytime goal scorer cherry on top for this bet builder. But it's the Algerian international Mahrez with 11 goals this season that we're going to go for, so Mahrez anytime against his former club, and that brings the bet builder to just over 3-1. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. BeGambleAware.org. And remember, take time to think.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
All right, so Boxing Day, or December the 26th. Fixture list looking like this. First of all, the two games that were scheduled to be early on at 12:30, Liverpool Leeds and Wolves Watford, are both postponed. Hopefully, or not, depending on your point of view, Adrian, the rest of the matches will be going ahead. Thusly, at 3 o'clock, West Ham Southampton, Spurs Palace, Norwich Arsenal, Man City Leicester and Burnley Everton. Then tea time, it's Aston Villa Chelsea before the evening closes with a bit of a treat. The Patrick Swayze double bill on Channel 5. You've got Dirty Dancing, and that's followed by, in my mind, the superior film Roadhouse. Have you seen that one, Nick? Have you seen Roadhouse?
I haven't, no. Should I?
He plays a bouncer at a roadhouse, a kind of a titular drinking establishment in some, I'm not sure where. Anyway, he's a rough and ready type, but with a heart of gold. And he, I'm not, I shouldn't say anything more about the nurse who patches him up. Because, you know, spoilers. I enjoyed Roadhouse tremendously. I say that's coming up, but there's also football. You can see Brighton, Brentford, the birds and the bees, if you will. Mm. And there's a game on Monday as well, which is Newcastle against Man United. But we won't talk about that because we've got a show on Monday. Adrian, as a player, Boxing Day, did you love it? Or were you more a kind of Jordan Henderson think of our welfare type?
No, I loved it because it was my sort of greatest day as a professional footballer was on Boxing Day. So,
was it?
Yeah, it was my full debut for Arsenal. I fell at noon kickoff, 1995, Arsenal against QPR. And yeah, we won 3-0 and had a really good game. And yeah, it was just a day I'll never forget. But what sort of made
it... When did
it,
you find out you were starting?
Not until I got there, yeah. And and I definitely overindulged on Christmas Day. I'd had a couple of glasses of wine. I'd gone for seconds, I think, on the Christmas pudding. I love Christmas pudding, and yeah, I hadn't really held back because I'd been an unused sub in the previous game at Liverpool. So I thought I'll probably be on the bench again. It'll be fine. I'll have another helping. But yeah, so it was quite the shock when I turned up, and but it was exciting. Drove straight there. None of this nonsense of meeting on Christmas Day and going in a hotel and eating all the right things. It was just rock up at 10:30 for 12 o'clock kickoff.
Vomit.
And yeah, brilliant. And there's some jelly babies, as they always were on the side. And I was chomping on a jelly baby when I realised my name was in the 11, not on the bench. So yeah, it's quite the day.
Did you not? Did you not kind of bring that in as your traditional pre-match regime day before every game? Just have a few cans. Fill your boots.
No? Have a drop of port about 7 o'clock on the night before.
I mean, this was Arsenal, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clark, taking it too seriously.
Yeah. Great. Is that all you had, Clarky? Is that all you had? No, I didn't, but maybe I should have done. It was arguably my best game, actually, of the nine that I had.
Did you set anyone up?
I set up a lot of chances in the game, chucked in a couple of megs, flicked it over David Barnsley a couple of times. What I remember from the day, apart from, you know, the whole buzz of it, was in the bath afterwards. And we had single baths in the marble dressing rooms at Highbury. And Martin Keown took a pew next to me in his bath.
God, I'm so glad you said pew.
Just for anyone with a slightly crackly reception, that's that's the seat rather than the echo. Yeah.
Right.
And he looked me in the eye, you know, in a Keown steely way, and he goes, "Clarkie." I was like, "What?" And he goes, "You've just ripped one of the best right backs in England apart. Well done, son." Like that. And I just never forget that. You never forget that moment when a naked Martin Keown gives you that kind of praise.
You tried that.
Sorry, everybody.
No, thank you for that image and so much more, Adrian. Duncan, you love Boxing Day, don't you? Because, I mean, who'll hit double figures this time? Because that always happens on Boxing Day.
Yep. No, I like Boxing Day football. I just don't like this continued eulogisation of Boxing Day 1963. So I wrote a piece on theanalyst.com this week about that very set of scorelines from 1963, which seems to have emerged in 2011 from a newspaper who decided to sort of dredge it up. And since then, it's been repeated every single year. And I don't mind the actual day of scores, that's fine. But it kind of, if people don't know, it's Fulham beat Ipswich 10-1, and there were 66 goals across 10 games, which is, I can confirm, quite a lot. But people kind of use it now as this kind of window to the past, sort of like, look how better football was in the olden days. And, you know, the players just got out there, a bit like Adrian was saying, you know, eating jelly babies and turning up an hour before kickoff. It was a better time. But it was just a random day. All the seasons around it were pretty much, you know, the same sort of goals per game as us. You know, it's just a completely one-off, bizarre set of fixtures.
I must admit, I've never taken that as being, oh, football was better back in the day. I just think, like, Boxing Day and also New Year's Day is a day when weird stuff happens in football.
But if you look at the numbers, it doesn't really check
out.
Does
it not?
No, I mean, there are some good things from Boxing Day. So I think people should focus on the more recent ones. Like, the oldest goal ever scored in Premier League history was in Boxing Day 2006, Teddy Sheringham for West Ham against Portsmouth. That's pretty good. He was 40 years old in 268 days. Pretty decent. I wonder how many jelly babies that took. only non-adult to get sent off in Premier League history, Wayne Rooney, Boxing Day 2002. And that was also the same Boxing Day that James Milner made his Premier League debut, and he's still going, probably going to play this Boxing Day. And then we talked about players not wanting to play on Boxing Day. Jack Rodwell has got the most Premier League appearances for any player never to have played on Boxing Day, 167. So he
was
really,
that coincidence,
really,
or did he used to pick up cards just ahead of?
He just really enjoyed eating Quality Street, so yeah, configured it every season. So,
right. Yeah. Did that Teddy Sheringham oldest Premier League goal ever, did it make the December goal of the month for 2006?
I don't think so.
Right.
But
Duncan says, listen, I don't think so, but he's literally just watched December's goal of the month for 2006. Maybe you have too. Because it's been quite the talking point, along with the 1963 Boxing Day fixture and results list. We'll touch on the reasons for that maybe a little bit later on, Nick Miller. But first off, let's talk about some of these games, that are coming up on December the 26th. Let's start with the Premier League leaders, Manchester City, who will be taking on Leicester. Man City, of course, already 3 points ahead of Liverpool, with the opportunity to extend that this time, with Liverpool postponing their game. Although Leicester won this fixture 5-2 last season with Jamie Vardy scoring a hat-trick. Would I be right in thinking that Jamie Vardy unlikely to feature in this game after he missed the penalty shootout against Liverpool Wednesday with a hamstring issue, according to the club?
Jamie Vardy, 9-goal Jamie Vardy is the Premier League player.
Ah, so are you now thinking, Duncan, you might just get away with this, half a season to go? Duncan, any new listeners, famously challenged Vardy to reach double figures this season. And Vardy responded with a massive opening set of goals.
He's got a T-shirt prepped.
He pinned the podcast up on the dressing room wall. It's all very this is all very suspicious. He reaches nine and then suddenly he gets a mysterious injury and there's Duncan just kind of sitting there grinning away. I'm not pointing any fingers, but, you know, where were you last night when Jamie Vardy injured his hamstring, Duncan?
Just in my underground voodoo cave. What of it? Just a weird old coincidence.
That 5-2 last season, just for context, is the only time that a Pep Guardiola side has ever conceded five goals.
But do you remember after that game, it was officially Pep's lost it. This is the end of Pep Guardiola. Mm. He's got to move on, maybe take over Qatar. That's your only option left. But turns out Pep Guardiola came back and was good.
Remarkable.
There was Remarkable. I did gain a little bit of, I was sort of grasping a little bit of hope from the Liverpool-Leicester game this week. Because, I mean, I think it was a point Daniel Storey made a couple of podcasts ago where he was talking about the way to get to Man City is get them early and score against them early and they just kind of lose the plot from there. But they've only conceded one first-half goal of the season. Mm. Leicester, of course, scored two pretty early against, admittedly, a kind of vaguely scratched Liverpool team. But, you know, if Leicester can do that on Boxing Day, then maybe we'll have...
On Boxing Day, exactly.
Yeah. Then, you also, know, maybe we'll have a game of it, but you know, maybe I'm just being optimistic.
Riyad Mahrez has lost all five of his games on Boxing Day, which is the worst, right. 100% playing record.
Former club as well.
Exactly. The evidence is piling up.
Mm. Ferran Torres is doing one, apparently to Barcelona for £50 million, euros?
He's a good player.
5 million euros, yeah.
Yeah, he's a good player, isn't he? He's obviously just knocked on the door for Pep and just said, I'm not happy. I want to go home.
Well, he seemed like he was going to be the next superstar at City at the start of the season. What happened?
It's a shock to me. It really is, because he got plenty of game time, he delivered goals, and then, to my knowledge, he got injured. So it's not as if he's been fit and consistently left out. But from what I understand, he's unhappy with the lack of game time, wants to be a number one somewhere. You do wonder whether he's a bit homesick. Obviously, that is an issue. And we've seen it before with Spanish players in particular. They haven't settled as well in England as people from other countries. So, yeah, it's obviously a combination of factors. And City are not standing in his way, which I think is kind of admirable, because the money to them isn't that big a deal, is it? Let's be perfectly honest. You do wonder how Barcelona can justify spending that kind of money.
Well, I want to talk to the credulous rube of a bank manager who's apparently lending Barcelona the money to buy Ferran Torres. I mean, you know, we need a little bit of work doing to the house. We have to wait. Theoretically, we have to wait to, you know, save up the money. But if we can speak to this guy, then we'll
I'd
be
love crazy. To go back to the Maldives. Maybe I could get a little loan from them on that.
They can buy him, but they can't necessarily play him because they've got to put him into the... So it's a bit like when you get a really good Christmas present, but you don't have the battery, so you're basically like, can't use it. Cheers, Mum. Thanks a lot.
Well, supposedly Aguero's retirement actually frees up a bit of a room here. I don't know what kind of how his contract rescission has worked out, but anyway, that seems to be in line for January. Returning to Boxing Day's action, just to touch on Chelsea, who are still touching distance of the title race, 6 points back from City, but a tough game coming up on Boxing Day at tea time, away at Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa.
Yes, obviously Gerrard, a lot of history with Chelsea. We're not going to mention you know what, but obviously nearly joined them in the 2000s, came close. Also, what you do see in the Premier League, and all leagues actually, is a lot of repeat fixtures on Boxing Day, because I think they try and give, obviously fairly local, but you know, it's not easy with geography. So Villa-Chelsea is a fairly classic Boxing Day game. Obviously, one of the all-time classics was the 4-4 between them at Stamford Bridge in 2007. Gareth Barry scoring a very late penalty in that game. So let's just hope for more of the same. 4-4 in this game would be enjoyable.
Well, yeah, it'd go against the grain for Chelsea to score four, wouldn't it? Given their current form, the Villa have been really tight at the back, hardly giving any chances away. Very low on the sort of expected goals against since Gerrard took over, so they won't find it easy to break them down. And Chelsea have definitely flattened out, haven't they, as an attacking force in recent weeks without Mason Mount popping up to score goals. You know, they've been quite devoid, really, of inspiration, and they'll have to improve.
Well, in terms of XG, the previous meeting between these two sides at Stamford Bridge back in September will make interesting reading. Villa lost 3-0 that game, but they had 18 attempts to Chelsea's 12. What do you think is behind, Adrian, the fall-off in goal scoring? Is it just injuries or what?
I think that clearly Lukaku and Werner's absence makes a tremendous difference. Werner in particular, even though we all know that he misses so many, but he stretches teams and he causes them an awful lot of problems. Their front line has been decimated, in fairness. Also, they've lost control in recent weeks, Chelsea. Chelsea are a team that dominate you. Yeah, they dominate you by pinning you in and they just keep coming at you. And you can't break them down. But they've been a bit more fragile. And I think the reason they've been a bit more fragile is because in central midfield, they've not had Conte and Kovacic available as often as they would have liked of late. Obviously, it's been Jorginho and Loftus-Cheek mainly. And that's definitely impacted it. They've been a touch one-paced. So without that sort of platform that we talk about, and also that your best forwards available, I think that's the combination really as to why that's happened.
That makes a lot of sense. What do you think, Nick? Are they going to slip to -9 behind the leaders?
Quite possibly. Villa have obviously looked pretty good since Steven Gerrard came in. I just wanted to go back to the what we were talking about the kind of COVID and the player welfare situation. Steven Gerrard said something quite interesting this week where he said we had a situation at the weekend where one of the players was kind of reluctant to get out of his car because he had COVID symptoms. And you know, I know Adrian has kind of put a very hard line down on this cancelling of games, but it is another consideration to think of that and how this is all this whole situation is going to, I know we've been dealing with this for a long time now, but how this situation is still going to be kind of mentally affecting players, whether they actually want, even if they test negative for this, whether they actually feel safe playing these games. So yeah, I mean, presumably there'll be kind of situations like that at most clubs, but I thought it was just quite interesting that
I think it's a very fair point. Honestly, and if I was a footballer today and your parents aren't young and or you've got someone in your family that's a little bit more vulnerable, then being in a football environment where it spreads like wildfire is going to play on your mind. So yes, I think psychologically this is having a far bigger effect on the players than we on the outside understand. It's as simple as that. I still think clubs should try and get games on because they've got enough pros to do it. But yeah, that aspect of it is tough on the guys, but the show goes on, or the must go on.
Let's go to our COVID correspondent, Duncan.
Yeah, I was just going to add, there's also the factor that you can't tell how it's going to affect people. Like, some people can have it and be symptomless. Speaking from personal experience, some people can have it and feel pretty grim. So that, obviously, you can say 10 days and then that player's going to be back. But if they get symptoms and they're feeling rubbish, they might be back. We saw in Newcastle, some of their players were out for months.
Kevin De Bruyne.
So, there's no right or wrong, but yeah, it's going to be one of those seasons with asterisks, isn't it?
Asterisks and the Premier League season. All right, next up, how about we get on to a bit of On This Day?
Hey, why is it called Boxing Day? 9 Premier League games on. It should be called Football Day.
Yeah, that old leftover turkey sandwich day.
What?
You definitely ate more than 9 of them last year. Yeah.
It's a feast for football fans on December the 26th, and Paddy Power's got a knockout offer just for Boxing Day. It's a completely free £5 bet builder to use on any of the 9 Premier League matches on Boxing Day. Paddy Power!
Pretty much online bet, but a bet only. Min 2 plus legs, max 1 free £5 bet per customer. Must have previously deposited to avail. T's and C's apply. 18 plus begambleaware.org.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
December 23rd, listener, which you know and I know as the day back in 2013 that Tim Sherwood was appointed as Spurs manager. later departing, not that much later, but May the following year, with quite a couple of major achievements. How to unpack his legacy in a 60-minute podcast like this. You could cite the 59% win ratio, but also the Gile, which marks him out as one of the very few managers to kind of brand an item of clothing as being there. Tony Pulis with the cap would be another example. Not sure how many others there are.
I mean, Julian Nagelsmann and a wide variety of kind of outrageous.
Yeah, but is there one that is his? What did you say?
FC River Island. I mean, speaking as a Wickham fan, I have to obviously mention Gareth Ainsworth, who has a fairly unique setup. He had some lucky red crocodile skin boots that got Wickham promoted, along with some other events.
On that, Duncan, have you ever seen Gareth Ainsworth without that tight-fitting dark navy shirt? I just don't think I have. I don't know if he's got a set of them or not. He's even done punditry in it.
I think it's very much an NFL thing where he generally wears the navy one, but there's a white one for sort of clashes. But obviously, normally it's got the kind of how the leather jacket with a lot of frills on it as well, which doesn't look that warm to me. And obviously, there's been some rainy games, away games, where he's looked pretty shivery because leather's not the ideal sort of, you know, it's not Gore-Tex, is it? So
tell that to cows.
Maybe he should go to Scott Parker's tailor, because he's made himself synonymous with the padded blazer, which for me is a shocker. I mean, it just looks too tight, doesn't it? I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Yeah, it's got a sort of fat suit overtones.
Moving on, I just wanted to shout out to Owen Coyle, who occurs to me as, you know, probably the preeminent short
Cox
sporting. Yes. Also on this day in 2011, Diego Simeone took over at Atletico Madrid.
Speaking of managerial greats, that's Simeone and Sherwood off the same breath.
They're on a rotten run form, Atletico Madrid. Midweek they lost 2-1 to Granada. That's four defeats in a row. First time that's happened in his 10 years in charge. Crikey.
Somehow, I think only a point ahead of Crisis Club Barcelona as well.
It's true,
quite an effort.
Yeah, despite taking players like Antoine Griezmann and that Luis Suarez from them as well. Now back to the Premier League and Boxing Day. We'll see all sorts of drama at the bottom end of the table. Norwich and Newcastle currently bottom of the pile on 10 points. Burnley a point better off. And then just on the other side of the dotted line are Watford, who are a couple of points above Burnley. Newcastle then 3 points from safety. And they're at home to Man United on Monday night. But situation for them complicated quite considerably by the fact that Norwich, their neighbours, have a game in hand on them. Watford actually have two, and will have three probably after this weekend. And Burnley already do have three games in hand on the Magpies. Right, Burnley are taking on Everton Sunday, or a scheduled two. Watford's game with Wolves, we'll have to wait for that at a later date. Norwich, meantime, are taking on Arsenal. Adrian?
Well, I think it's Arsenal will fancy themselves quite strongly. They're scoring a lot of goals. One thing I've really noticed in recent weeks, obviously I was away for a patch of it, but I've been catching up, is how aggressive they've become, how hostile they are inside the final third. They're really hunting impacts better than what they were earlier in the season. And it helps someone like Martinelli. So if you sit back and just play in front of teams, Gabriel Martinelli's not going to hurt anyone. Okay, he might dart in behind and score, but it'd be difficult to do that. But if you win the ball inside the opposition half unexpectedly, before the defence is set, and he gets on his bike, he's one of the most lethal young players I've seen for many years. So I expect Arsenal to be aggressive in the game, look to get about Norwich, who'll try and pass through the lines, and hopefully it'll be a really, really good game. They've got a terrible Boxing Day record, which is, you know, important. I think we've established.
Who do Norwich do?
They've never won in the Premier League on Boxing Day. No, and Arsenal have got a really good record, lost, I think, 2 of 23 on Boxing Day. So, for what it's worth, Arsenal, history is on Arsenal's side, and I guess the form book is too. And the other thing I just quickly want to mention is Norwich haven't scored in each of their last three home games under Dean Smith. Tough games, creditable performances, but they haven't scored. I just think it's natural that they're going to go all out to score. They're going to want to please their supporters, and I think we can expect an attacking mentality from them and hopefully a good game.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which will give some cheer to all you Hammers fans when David Moyes signs Marouane Fellaini to help with West Ham's latest injury crisis. Pre-match bet builders only get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Other T's and C's apply, and please gamble responsibly.
Go on, Nick. Tell us about the 2006 Goal of the Month competition.
Well, this is the subject of a piece on The Athletic. I should say that my colleagues, I helped out a little bit on this piece, but my colleague Stuart James wrote most of it. Actually, Stuart isn't here, so I'll just take all the credit for it. So, yeah, it was all my work. It's a piece about the 2006 December Goal of the Month competition, widely regarded, I think, as the best Goal of the Month competition that anyone can really remember. Featured screamers such as Paul Scholes against Aston Villa, that one that pinged in off the crossbar from a volley. There was a couple of stonkers from Chelsea at Everton, one from Frank Lampard, and I think I don't know if we're going to rank them, but my favourite was Didier Drogba's.
Right.
If only for this sort of existential despair it seemed to inspire in Tim Howard when he
Tim Howard, I think, features on the receiving end twice in this quite extraordinary collection of mainly long-range strikes. And I mean, brilliant strikes, but it's all kind of thunderbolts from distance.
Yeah. Pre-XG, wasn't it? No one knew what they were doing. They thought it was worthwhile.
Right. Would you, Duncan, with your typically iconoclastic bent, would you subscribe to this notion that it was the greatest ever month of Premier League goals?
I mean, it is a good selection of goals. I think, for me, the best one is the Michael Essien one because the technique is perfect.
Lampard again. Back to Michael Essien to shoot. Oh!
It's against Arsenal, and he hits it with the outside of his foot. I believe the move is called swaz in the modern parlance, but back then it was just called hitting the ball with the outside of your foot. It goes well wide of the Arsenal's, well, I guess it would be their right-hand post, the left-hand post to Essien, and then bends back in viciously. And aesthetically, it's perfect, but elsewhere in this competition, you do have, like, Matty Taylor's for Portsmouth, which...
It's beautiful.
It's yeah, not. It's just. Brilliant. It's a defensive clearance in the wrong half of the field. I don't. It's all right.
I think it was number one.
Oh, that's Matty Taylor. Oh, wonderful effort! One of the goals of the season so far.
It's just too violent. That sort of goal. You want the beauty of the Essien one, or if you want the violence, as Nick said, the Drogba one has a sort of raw violence, which is better than. Matty Taylor's is a sort of violence in a pub car park on Boxing Day evening when it's all got a bit hectic, whereas Drogba's is pure.
I mean, I was going to say that this goal in this competition is so good that when we were watching it before recording, Duncan did actually acknowledge that a couple of the goals were decent.
Right.
So, you know, if you can...
He must have been some player, this Alexander.
Yeah.
The Van Persie one, though, I think we all agree that the Robin Van Persie one doesn't really belong. It's probably not even in the top 10 of Van Persie.
The Paul Scholes one, though, as you say, it's a volley from some distance, but the remarkable thing about that is the way that the ball drops down as if from outer space. And he just still absolutely I don't know how he didn't break his foot.
He must have seen a tree in the behind the goal. That's the only inspiration that he can get.
Do you guys know who the current, which current Premier League player has the most goals from outside the box? Little quiz.
Listener.
Come on, Duncan. You must know this. Or are you just being polite?
I'm thinking. I've got brain fog. It's going to be someone quite old.
So this is overall rather than just this
overall,
season?
Yeah, okay. Overall.
Kevin De Bruyne? No. No.
Go on, Clarky. Come on. Tell us.
Give me a guess.
Not Trent? No.
No, it wouldn't be. Not James Ward-Prowse.
Shall I put you out of your misery?
Please.
Here's a clue.
You wouldn't expect it.
Hugo Lloris.
He's not famed for scoring from outside the box.
I mean, could be anyone.
Is it Harry Kane?
It is Harry Kane.
There you go.
Get in. Nick Miller, yeah, 21. Ericsson's got 23. I'd say the best specialist at scoring from outside the box in the current game is Riyad Mahrez. He's got 16. And I guess I would hazard a guess that the percentage of his goals that come from distance is a lot higher than someone like Kane.
Harry Kane in leading goal scoring category. Shocker. Spurs, featuring Harry Kane probably, will be hosting Crystal Palace this Sunday as Arsenal legend Patrick Vieira looks to do the double over Spurs. It was Crystal Palace's 3-0 defeat of Tottenham Hotspur way back in the opening. What was that? I think that was early September. Set Nuno Espirito Santo on the road to ruin. They'd had a brilliant start to the campaign, Spurs under Nuno winning their opening three, but after Palace, nothing was ever quite the same again. Palace, though, haven't won a league game at Tottenham since November 1997. Why did they win that one? It was Christian Gross's first game in charge of Spurs. Just offering that up. Also this Sunday, West Ham up against Saints. Stop me if you want to drop anything on these. Adrian?
Armando Broja. Just wanted to give him a little heads up while he's flying so high. I was searching for something else stats-wise earlier in the week, and it shocked me. I was looking at shots on target per 90. Top two, Mo Salah and Cristiano Ronaldo. Who pops up in third? Armando Broja. Remarkable, really. Mm. He loves a shot. And his strike rate is pretty good as well. I think a goal every 155 minutes. So, yeah, he's someone to keep your eye on. He looks a real prospect. I think this could be a better game than we expect, West Ham Southampton, because neither team are as good defensively as they have been. And I just think it could feature, I don't know, one or two mistakes, a few goals, I reckon.
Mm. Saints, who are by no means clear of the wrong end of the table. They're 6 points off the drop at the moment, but things can change so very, very quickly down there. Burnley hosting Everton, who may well have Dominic Calvert-Lewin returning. They've only had one win in their last 11, Everton, but his presence in the starting lineup or even from the bench would be a major plus. Scored in the first three Premier League games of the season, but has been out since with a succession of injuries. And the other game coming up on Sunday, as I mentioned, is Brighton against Brentford. We were talking about this game, or at least the reverse fixture in Monday's pod, because that was the one with the fewest shots of any Premier League fixture this season, which is surprising to me. I don't think of these two teams. I know Brighton don't score many goals, but I don't think of them not creating chances. But when Brentford hosted Brighton in the reverse fixture, there were only 11 shots between the pair of them. Do you anticipate similar returns? Should we all pile on the Swayze on Channel 5?
Yeah, well, I mean, if it's a Swayze double bill, then that's, you know...
You might. You can, of course, record those for posterity, for your collection.
I mean, thinking of Swayze films, you can imagine this could be a game that ends in a point due to a break, like Point Break film.
I think of all the Alexander cultural references, that's possibly the most spurious.
No.
Should point out that Brighton are on the longest run without a Boxing Day win of any team in the top four divisions. So if there's one team that hates Boxing Day, it is Brighton.
More than Norwich?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were going to go maybe, Duncan, when you were doing that long build-up, I thought you were going to go Dirty Dancing. Nobody puts Tony on a corner or something like that.
Yeah. That's also
anyway, maybe not.
Available.
We'll move on. Brighton have given Newcastle permission to speak to Dan Ashworth about the vacant director of football role. Not, I mean, the role is vacant, not the director of football. They don't want to bring in a...
They tried that, didn't they?
They've had Dennis Wise already.
Oh, crikey.
Shots fired. You 90s footballers. Jesus.
Ashworth has been the technical director at the Amex since 2018. It was a key figure in the work of the FA that led to England winning the under-20 and under-17 World Cups. There you go.
He's good. He knows what he's doing. Honestly, I think he's a really, really smart footballing guy. Brighton are a superbly run club. Lots of positives there. The one negative is that they've failed to sign goal scorers in recent years. And you'd say, well, is that on Dan Ashworth? But personally, I would imagine it's more a case that he's as frustrated as the Brighton fans are that the players he's recommended have maybe been out of budget for Brighton. I just think that is the next step for them. They have to spend a little bit more to get the goal scorers in Brighton. And if you are Dan Ashworth and the richest club on the planet are interested in you and you've got that frustration, you'd go and have a chat, wouldn't you? You just have to.
You might well do. All right. That's Boxing Day then, and superb entertainment. It looks, just on the subject of superb entertainment in and around the 26th, the 27th of December features Newcastle against Man United. Wait, what did you think I was going to say, Nick Miller?
Well, I don't know. Is there anything else on TV that evening?
It's on Channel 5 again.
Oh, what a
yeah, if you're
what
not watching football, you're watching Channel 5 over the post-Christmas days, because it's true. I mean, now that you mention it, World's Strongest Man gets going on the Heat 1 from Sacramento. And when I say heat, I mean heat. 42 degrees. Boom. Yeah.
That must make the big lads sweat a lot, I imagine.
There's perspiration all over the shop. Absolutely.
What sort of large things are the big men pushing or lifting?
Well...
So good task for a big man.
Yeah. There's all the usual kind of your favourites. I don't know which your favourite is, but if it's throwing kegs over a very high bar, then they do that backwards. I mean, you know, behind their backs. They lift up logs and the Atlas stones are all there. There's a couple of train-based, if you like oldie-timey Western steam locomotives, there's a lot of that in this. But they have one train on a track, which they had to do. They usually, you know, the truck pull. They did it with the train, but it turns out trains move really quickly once you get them going on. So they rapidly had to stop that and reinvent it as a train push, which also went pretty quickly. But at least they weren't getting run over by a large train, which would have made good telly. But anyway,
that is essentially why trains were good, right?
So. Yeah, faster than a person on tracks. Yeah. And we can, you know, confirm that. The key thing, if you're of a mind to tune in, that, I mean, storyline-wise, last year's, Nick, you probably recall, was a major shock with the 23-year-old at the time, Alexei Novikov, the Ukrainian, who shocked everybody by winning. He's back again this time. The guy he narrowly pipped last time is the giant, equally giant, well, much more giant, in fact, Scotsman Tom Stoltman, a.k.a. the Albatross.
I thought that was Martin Keown at Old Trafford. Or maybe Martin Keown in the bath.
Possibly. Tom, anyway, is gunning to lift the title himself after narrowly missing out in 2020. Also, though, bidding for the title is Brian Shaw, who's won four of them. He hasn't won it, though, in 5 years now, I think? And nobody's ever come back from a margin that long, from a gap that long to take it, but... Brian, I have to say, going into this event, into this competition, looking in pretty amazing form. Could this be the year the man they call, well, they used to call Gigantor, and then he decided to change his nickname to the Evolution of Strength. Yeah, the man they call the Evolution of Strength. Could this be the year that he...
If your nickname's got four words, I would suggest narrowing it down a bit.
He's a big guy. Gigantor
and the Evolution of Strength, at least better nicknames than the Albatross. Can you talk us through where that nickname comes from?
No, ask Tom Solomon. His brother, Luke, who's also involved, is the Highland Oak. Do you like that one a bit better?
Yeah,
that's
all
right, yeah. I know what Nick means. The albatross implies kind of swooping down, which you don't imagine.
No, I think is it not his the extraordinary wingspan that he brings?
Right.
I would believe that's what it's about. I mean, obviously, albatross has all sorts of connotations, you know.
Mm.
But hey, anyway, that's on the 7 o'clock on the 27th, Channel 5, I seem to recall. But before that is Boxing Day, and before that it's Christmas.
Forget World's Strongest Man, pivot to World's Dullest Man, and some calendar nerds will tell you if Boxing Day, a.k.a. December the 26th, falls on a Sunday, then actually Boxing Day is Monday, but we don't want to go there because it ruins lots of football-related fun. What?
Why?
What do you mean?
Oh, technically, because it's on a weekend, they move Boxing Day to...
Because Boxing Day is a Monday, but that's... I hate that, so...
Oh, but no, Boxing Day's the day after Christmas.
For me, and for many, yes. Wow. But honestly, you will get some calendar nerds popping up going, oh, actually, it's the 27th this year. No one cares. Watch World's Strongest Man.
Excellent. All right, well, listen, have a very happy Christmas and Boxing Day, whatever day it falls. Well done, Duncan, for soldiering on today. Appreciate it. Nick, brilliant to have you on board. Adrian, lovely to have you back from your holes. And producer Charlie, many thanks to you as well. Listener, thank you for making us part of your Christmas time. We'll be back on Monday, so do join us for that as well. But now, from all of us here, it's Merry Christmas.
And Winterval.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.